You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yep, welcome everybody to my couch, as you always are. Now we're doing Wednesdays, 11 in the morning, wherever you're at. But Pacific time, that's where we're at. So thanks for joining me. And I put it out there on social media about what we're talking about today, which has to do with public speaking. So many people come to me in my practice who work in an environment where they have to speak to a small or a larger group. And this is just not only applying to work environments, but also to social situations. A lot of my clients say, well, I'm going to this party or this gathering or this whatever it may be, and I'm really uncomfortable because I don't know a lot of people. I don't know how to start up a conversation or speak or even give a best man or a best whatever, girlfriend, bridesmaid speech at a wedding, anything like that. A lot of people have fear of public speaking. So today you're going to get some great information and find out how to manage your fear of public speaking, or if you're not fearful, but just how to become a better speaker and how to really capture your audience and get across what you're trying to say. So let me bring my special guest on. We're going to be talking about his amazing book. There he is, Lee Glickstein. Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
You know what? I'm ready to go. And I'm ready for your lessons, because your book, let's check it out right now, folks. Here it is. Whoop. There it is. I'm going to be showing this throughout the show because this is a must read. It really, I mean, I thought I was decent at public speaking because that's sort of what I do. And I have spoken in front of classes and you know, psych conventions and things like that. But you nailed it. This book is great. So thank you for that. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Dr. Michelle. I appreciate
you. Oh, you're welcome. You're so welcome. Let me just tell folks a little bit more about you and what you do and who you are. You have founded, Lee Glickstein Stein has founded Speaking Circles International. Lee, you're an authority on leadership presence, magnetism, and all that has to do with helping people with public speaking. Mm-hmm. Now, Lee, you've presented your unique programs at annual conventions, national workshops, at over 30 local chapters of the National Speakers Association. And, of course, through Speaking Circles International, your team has trained over 1,000 Speaking Circles facilitators who've led groups in 8 countries in 6 languages. Of course, Lee holds a degree in sociology from Brooklyn College, worked as a social worker in New York. What a great way to be with people. I mean, my gosh, right? You're thrown right into the fray of, wow, I've got to speak with people and help them out. So today we're talking about his latest book that I just showed you, Be Seen Now, Inspiring Insights into Being a Fearless Speaker. By the way, Lee is also the author of Be Heard Now and Your Fear of Public Speaking Forever, and Be Heard Now, How to Speak Naturally and Powerfully in Front of Any Audience. So you get to choose, get all the books, and really learn how to be a great public speaker. By the way, thanks so much for all that you've done and all you do for everybody. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You know, I always like to get into the backstory of my specialists and my authorities on certain topics. So can you sort of tell us why you wrote these books about public speaking and what it was in your background?
Well, Dr. Michelle, I had the world's worst speaking anxiety.
Did you? Oh, no.
I'm very competitive. So I really in a book report standing in front of a class in junior high school.
Oh my goodness.
I couldn't handle it. I couldn't, I would just, yeah. And then in my 20s and my 20s, I thought I wanted to be funny. I could be a comedian, but I'd get up in front of groups, and if they didn't laugh at my first joke, I would die in my own death. So I had this awful stage fright for until my late 40s.
Ah, wow.
And, yeah. Okay. And I had this epiphany that changed everything, that really showed me what public speaking, there is no such thing as public speaking. There's only private speaking to one person at a time.
Oh, okay. We'll learn more. Okay.
I went to Toastmasters, which is a good organization, but it just scared me more. You got to fake it to me. I wasn't able to do that. So I assumed my problem was that I had to crash through this fear.
Right.
Through this fear. That's what you do with a fear. I just break through it and go. But and it didn't work for me. What I finally realized, I had this epiphany that it was not a block in speaking. It was a block in receiving the available listening.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. Doesn't it? Oh, that's incredible. So what was it? You just had an aha moment and said,
It was an aha moment. And I realized that I was not that in any room, I realized there's a certain amount of listening that's coming. Maybe not everybody's paying attention, but there's listening. And if you need the listening, if you don't let the listening come to you, you're constantly fighting to be understood.
Sure.
So I created the speaking circle where it's understood that listening is the first step. So when people get up in front of the group, and unlike in Toastmasters, which is still a good organization, but it's more about performance and getting it right. But so I have a group, it became Speaking Circle, and the first instruction is to the listeners to have a soft, steady gaze of kind regard to the
That's
person.
That's very captivating.
Yeah, and the idea is with the instruction to the person up front, I don't even say to speak, is to be with one person at a time.
Aha. Uh-huh.
There's no public speaking. One person at a time.
Right.
And see that they feel seen.
Okay.
So once everybody's doing their part to give that soft, steady gaze or kind regard, your job is to allow it in, and you don't even have to speak in my classes because there's no more pressure.
Yep.
And what happens when you let the listening in from a group is it starts to bring out, you start to feel safe.
Sure.
In these greenhouses. Yeah. And you begin to get the way of being with a group one person at a time so that when you go out into the quote real world.
Right.
You're appreciating the, instead of asking them, appreciate, you're loving them one person at a time.
Wow. That is a great concept. I just want to put it out there as well that I know that as the founder of Speaking Circles, you coined the phrase of relational presence. And I want to get into what that means. That's a huge under that umbrella, but that's a huge, wonderful way of teaching people and understanding what that means, the presence. But first of all, I sort of like to begin with asking you, how early does this fear of public speaking start? How does that happen? Does it start when we're babies or little people or what? You said you were 14.
It really starts with how the mother or the mother figure or the main parent gives you their eyes and receives you. If they're just like, think of a baby, but no, this little toddler, this little infant, expressions.
Right.
And if you're not given eyes and patience and breathing, that's how it happened to me. I didn't get that. I didn't get those eyes.
Sure.
And we do. So the way around that, the healing is as adults to regaze by having these support groups where you start to allow that gaze, that mother gaze of you're okay no matter what. And the father gaze of you You start to let that in to a group.
Right.
And that's the healing of what happened when we were so young, we had no idea what happened to us.
Yes, that's interesting. Do you think, and I just, you know, I roll with what you say, and I just sort of have ideas about things. There are so many busy parents these days. Do you think that's affecting a lot of children? Because parents are giving their little, you know, boxes of time to their children, and then they're, I got to go, or daddy's got to be online, or you think that's affecting
parents today? Mm-hmm. Yes. There's a story one of my mothers tell, a mother in my circles tell, about her little five-year-old daughter, and her five-year-old daughter says, Mommy, and she's doing the dish or something. She said, yes, Mommy.
Yes,
Mommy, don't you hear me say yes, yeah, but you're not giving me your
Yep.
Busy parents have to be able to stop.
Right.
And just give their eyes to realize, not the yes, you know, not the eye service.
Right, exactly, eye service.
But a gaze of allowance that this is a real human in there.
Right. This is, I think, why so many kids who are raised with au pairs or nannies or whatever, they're really vibing to the nanny. They're really, you know, I have a lot of people who were raised by other caregivers, and they really love those caregivers because they were right there, you know, and mom came home and they said, can't so-and-so stay for dinner, or can she be with me tonight? Can she tuck me in? And the mothers go, what? They don't get it. Right? Why?
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Michelle, when your mother gets on your couch in your office, talk about it. How do you deal with them in a psychological perspective? How do you tell them? What do you tell them when you know the problem is they're not giving that attention that the child needs?
How do I go gentle? No, that's a great question. Thank you for asking me. I go gentle on them because I understand, and we sort of explore their backstory and their fears and or their anxiety about the importance of attending to their work or what needs to be done and what are the, you know, causes of that anxiety. So we work on that and how you can breathe. And as you mentioned in your book, be present and listen, because I think raising children, that is the most important job in the world.
Yeah.
That's it.
I agree. The job.
That's the job.
In my circles, there's mothers, fathers, in being listened, they start to talk about their relationship with their children, and they start to say things like, yeah, what's happening in this circle, the listening, I want to bring this to my family.
Yes, right?
Because we really
listening
in my work.
Exactly. Oh, that makes so much sense, you know. So let's get into relational presence.
Okay. Yeah.
So what are some of the factors within that that you teach folks how to be more effective? You have, you know, three steps primarily.
Speaking, presence.
Yes.
Is in, say, acting presence. That's how acting presence. And then there's in spiritual presence. But these meanings of presence doesn't cover what I call relational presence. In other words, you can't just be present yourself.
Right.
You have to be relationally present. So what we're learning is how to be relationally present with your audience by being with them one at a time and seeing that person so they feel seen. So that's relational presence, rather than somebody comes in, you know, charismatic presence. Everybody thinks this person is so wonderful. No, we're all wonderful in the presence. We're in the same.
I love that. No, I love that definition. So it's being, and I think, again, And I don't mean to keep harping on it, but I think in this day and age with social media, so many people are preoccupied with multitasking and having to defocus and you know, with it, with everyone. I'm not talking now about raising children. I'm talking about dealing with everyone, even, you know, their spouse or their partner or what, their friend. They're always defocusing, and it's let's get real here. Let's have presence and tune in. And so I get it. Don't you think that's a thing going on right now?
Absolutely. And I'm trying to get the Martin Buber quote about.
Oh, I love it. Yes.
I get it. We have it somewhere in the book, but
yeah,
it's sure. about us, not about me and you.
Yep.
Usness of the moment. So that's what, when we get up in front of a group, we want people to feel they belong in the group, because they're sitting there. They may be dressed well, they look like they have it together, but what's going on inside? So we want to see them so they feel seen. That's an interesting idea. How can somebody be asking a speaker to see the audience so they feel seen? I'm so busy remembering what to say, and here you're asking me to say everything into the eyes of a listener.
Yeah.
And to see them so they feel seen. Well, that's why the only way to do it is with a safe group. For most people, a safe group where we're allowing it to happen. You can't do it wrong.
Right. Exactly. A safe group. Now, you talked earlier about how you thought, well, in Toastmasters as well, it's sort of like exposure therapy, right? The more you expose yourself to the feared situation, you can do it. But that kind of works, but not always, because there are other elements that you describe right here. Be Seen Now. It's a great book on public speaking and everything else. Also helping your self-esteem, helping your self-confidence in any kind of situation where you may be needing to talk to a group, coworkers, friends, whatever that is. Okay. So that being said, it's much more than just exposing yourself to the fear situation. It's taking the time to go through the steps that you offer in your relational processes, right?
Yeah, I wanted to say something about that exposure therapy, because it is exposure therapy. But now I want to compare a little about Toastmasters and speaking circles, not to say they're both great in their own realm.
Sure, sure.
But if you're going to have exposure therapy and you create a situation where that exposure is painful sometimes, like people are giving you people are constructive criticism, you know, and suddenly it's not safe.
Right.
But if you want to have exposure therapy, it needs to be created so that you can't do it wrong. Right. In other words, it's got to be totally safe. So you don't, as soon as you have to speak, suddenly there's pressure. So I say, just be with one person at a time and breathe until words arise naturally, and do it wrong. You have a coach who's, as a coach, I say, stay with somebody.
Yeah.
Take a breath. You don't have to talk.
Yes.
So when people are exposed in a situation where they are supported in their deepest, maybe say their deepest fear, their deepest pain.
Sure.
As exposure therapy, rather than let's
just jump into it and cause more trauma.
Let's get up and take all our clothes off and say, "This is me, I'm okay," and maybe everybody's cheering there, and then you go off stage and say, what the hell do I do?
Yikes. You talk about the great concept, and we just talked about, as you call it, luminous listening. So let's talk about the importance of seeing your listeners so they feel seen. How do we do that? I mean, I remember speaking in front of, you know, groups, psychological groups and everything, and I kind of like pan the room. I'd find someone in the, you know, front row and then I'd think to myself, oh no, I'm focusing too much on these. And then I've, you know, so get out of the head, and how do we do this?
Well, In a sense, there's no way to pin down how to do it. It's almost something you learn. You learn by experience. So let's say you come into a safe speaking circle group and you're a newcomer and other people have done it before, mixture of people. And, you know, the instruction is when somebody's up front, when you're up front, first, the listener, the instructor, the listener is always be available with your gaze so that when the person looks at you, you're right there. Right there. Yes. So you say, but it's your first time.
Yeah.
And when somebody looks at you, you're thinking about, oh, what am I going to say? Or how do I look at them? And
you're
a little uncomfortable. But then as you go along, you notice that when it's your turn and you look at a person, and you're feeling their connection because they've done this before, you know? And then you start to learn how to do what serves you for others. And as you practice, about neuroplasticity.
Sure.
We're actually bringing new neural pathways that associate being seen or seeing a person with connection. Our brain starts to naturally look at people, not just in the circle when they look at you and you. And I'm going to do this into the camera so people can see up because I'm looking. Come in.
I know there's someone in the front.
People are looking.
Not going to happen.
They're looking in the camera. I'm looking in the camera.
The camera. Anyway. No, they're not. I have these signs outside my little studio room. Please do not ring or knock. Recording in process. But people don't. Anyway, they need to have more luminous listening and reading. Anyway.
I can't teach somebody listen. I mean, I can say it's a soft, steady gaze of kind regard with the lights on behind your eyes, but only by practicing and getting it from people who've learned how to do it, your neural pathways begin to do it now. Itself.
It's so.
And then in the quote, real world.
Yes. I love it because a lot of people, you know, hear about the concept of the neural pathways and how we learn. They go, I don't want to learn that. I don't know. I just want to do it. So let me just share with you all, in case you just tuned in here, if you're watching or listening on latalkradio.com, I'm with Lee Glickstein. Why do I always keep saying that? I think maybe because I just listened to a Bruce Springsteen song this morning. Anyway, Lee Glickstein is the founder of Speaking Circles International. He's an authority on leadership presence and magnetism in public speaking. And this is his latest book we're talking about, Be Seen Now, Inspiring Insights into Being a Fearless Speaker. It is a great read. It moves quickly. It is really easy to understand, but really teaches you a lot about you and your brain and how to become more of an effective speaker and have more self-confidence in whatever size group, or even when you're at a party and you kind of walk in and you want to mingle and you want to get more social, but you don't know how to start a conversation because you're worried, like you were saying earlier, about what are they going to think of me? And it's very uncomfortable. So.
I would like to point to the simplest exercise
listener,
viewer can do to get the first base here. Because I just saw my mirror sitting on my desk.
That's scary. I don't like doing that. Let's do this together. I have my mirror.
Okay. In the book, I have a whole chapter, several essays on mirror work. If you just have handheld, it works with the hand. Best. And if you look at yourself, and so this exercise in finding your friend in the mirror, because so many of us have anxiety. We use a mirror to comb our hair and wash our face and brush our teeth, but do we stay there and say, "Hi, hello, buddy. How are you doing, sweetheart?"
Right.
Well, you are your audience. So
right.
these exercises in the book, you do yourself with a mirror is to take 30 seconds
right
and just breathe
right
and then maybe then another minute to talk. Even just 2 minutes a day, like maybe before you go to sleep, you'll say, okay, so how was that day for you, buddy? Yeah, that was a difficult, you know, have a little conversation about, and tomorrow's going to be this. And you wake up in the morning, say, oh, good morning, buddy. A minute each time, you are developing a friendship. That's, and that's because if you can't, I know so many folks who, before we started doing the mirror work,
sure,
they weren't having it.
Right.
But
right.
Think of this, if you're in front of a group and you, when you look in the mirror, you don't feel friendly. When you see people out there, you're gonna have the same anxiety.
Right.
Whereas in terms with yourself in the mirror, in fact, the way coming to terms, I worked with this woman, she was in her 80s and she had trouble looking in the mirror. And after 10 minutes working with me, she said, oh, that's how God sees my wrinkles.
I love that. That is so cute.
So you can do that with yourself. The difference in what you're seeing when it's the same as when you've learned to be in the mirror.
Yes.
Is what you want to be able to do in front of a group to see all these lovely friends.
And, you know, that's beautiful. That reminds me of being in keeping with one of the concepts I teach is, you know, when we meditate or we relax and we breathe and we go within, we become familiar with what's within us. And, you know, asking yourself or talking to yourself and finding those answers. And this way, you're finding answers to questions and fears about, wow, that's how I look, huh? That's, I'm okay with that, you know? And if you, what I say to some of my female clients, them get up and they'll, you know, I said, talk, it's the mirror work. Talk to the mirror and talk to yourself. They go, oh my God, I look horrible. I said, well, go put your makeup on then and then go do your best self in the mirror if that's what you want, if you feel better about that. You
know? Sure, sure. Yeah.
Guys, comb your hair, you know, a clean shave or whatever you want to do. You know.
Yeah.
So, no, that's great. That's a great exercise.
We're supposed to enjoy being with ourselves.
Yes. Exactly. So when we're looking, so we do the mirror work. So when we're standing in front of a group, small group, large group, we want our listeners, viewers, to feel seen. So, and I mentioned that a little bit earlier about, I don't know who to zoom into in the room while I'm talking. I don't know who. So I kind of, I like scan the room when I'm talking. I don't know. Is that a good thing to do, Lee?
No. Well, I'll give you an example. I've got I worked with a professional speaker who's a blind.
Love it.
And she wanted to be more magnetic. And she sent me a video of her work. And she was okay, and she was doing the scanning, which is what they told her to do. You can't see anybody, but you scan the audience. And I said, no, you know where they are. Sense that you're with one person at a time.
Yes.
Sense how that would be.
Yes.
I've had blind people in my speaking circles, and
I love that.
They find a way to use other senses to get the same results.
Right. Oh, that's beautiful.
So scanning is not seeing anybody. And they're sitting out there well-dressed or whatever. They look like they have it together. But they really don't feel they belong. So many humans in this world, in this culture, Western culture, they don't feel their part, that they don't feel they belong in their body, they don't belong in the country, they don't belong in their family, they don't belong in this world.
Right.
And they're sitting there not belonging. You can allow them that sense of belonging.
Mm. Yes. In your
inclusive way of being with one person at a time, people who you never looked at will feel that they belong.
Yes. Oh, that's lovely.
And we crave belonging more than anything.
Yes. Oh, that's true. I think we all do, don't we? I mean, but for some people, you know, it's very, I guess, awkward, as they say. It's awkward because I'm like kind of, we do chair work sometimes in therapy, right? We look at a person we need to tell, it's the invisible chair, right? I'm that person that they need to tell their parent or their sibling or their partner what they're afraid to tell them, right? Yes. So we do the chair work where they practice and practice. And so is that sort of part of your element as well in your groups that you teach to just keep, you know, talk to each other, look at each other, connect with each other and feel.
It's so funny you say connect. We say allow the natural connection. Because if you're trying to connect, you're coming from a set of unconnection, right?
Right.
So a note of understand intellectually that we are all connected. Breathe, be neutral, be accepting, and allow the connection to show up, to flourish.
Right.
It's funny. I thought when you said connect, when we do facilitated training, I've trained hundreds of facilitators all over the world, and we practice the language of it, and we say, if they give as an instruction, so connect with one person at a time, me as the coach says, no. We don't use the language of connect. Like we don't use the language of invite connection or allow connection. Okay. Just like we don't say eye contact.
Right.
Because that's the technique. It's like eye service. It's like lip service.
Right.
So don't say eye contact, say available. So
that's awesome.
I mean, pardon me for correcting your language.
No, please correct me. I have no, really. I want to learn these things. I'm reading your book still, and I'm almost done. Be seen now. And let's talk more about something that people tell me about when they fear speaking or going into groups or going into gatherings or whatever. You say it's important to practice radical authenticity. Now, a lot of people say, yeah, but aren't I kind of acting? I'm acting as if I'm a good speaker, or I'm acting. How can I be authentic if I'm doing a presentation? You know, how do I get authentic? So that's my question.
Well, that's why, you know, if an opera singer, a new opera singer is learning the scales,
right.
la, 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 and then he finally says, he's practicing, he says, but I want to be singing at the Met. I can't just go, la, 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 la.
Right.
No, but you do your spring training. You practice at the bottom where it all starts. So you can't, you don't just, if you try to be just authentic without the work of discovering it with a supportive audience, it's not going to work like if you do the primary work, like what people do in your office, right? When you're practicing being a human.
Right. Right. Exactly.
So you have to do the work. And luckily, the work we do to get there is, instead of no pain, no gain, it becomes pleasurable pretty quickly.
Yes.
When you don't have to speak and you're just learning how to be held in the heart of a supportive group who's giving it to each other.
Sure. Exactly. Authentically.
And not demanding perfection right away. Because if you're trying to perform that authenticity, you can't get it right.
Exactly. I think one of the coolest things that I enjoy about some of my favorite TED Talks are the presenters who are authentic. And they're funny. Mm-hmm. Of course, they're well prepared. I do have people that say, I don't know how to start my talk. Now we're talking about the logistics of, you know, really establishing, you know, the beginning. How should people sort of begin a talk or introduce? Well, of course they need to introduce themselves, but do they start off with a joke, they say, or to me, they ask, Shall I give them the information right away to tell them what I'm going to educate them about? Or how do we?
Well, this is my, I didn't know, this is my favorite question, because once you are in relation, when your idea is in relation with the audience, what we do is work with people on opening with a 1 or 2 minute personal story that paints a scene from your life where you were going through something terrible or there was a turning point and boom, it's an interesting story about how you learned something. A personal story that leads to why you do what you do. But it's a vulnerable story. Hopefully maybe bringing up something where you were failing in a similar way to your audience.
Right.
That would relate to them. And take that and move from that story to how it led you to do the work you've done and go to the school you are and follow through, because you would absolutely, you know, just like, I'll give you an example. A fellow who's a financial consultant,
right,
who dredged story when he was a kid, the family would be, the father would drive them from place to place to get away from the debt collecting
right?
And so he's a little kid in a car, and they're driving everywhere in order to avoid paying a debt. And he said to himself at age 5, "I'm going to do everything I am when I have a family to be not to have this financial problem." And he became a financial expert.
That's great.
And that he does that for other people.
Sure.
So we all have what we do is based on some awful thing that we went through, some limitations, some problem we had that we surmounted, and now we have some help for people going through the same problem. So right away, tell them what you went through, but only a minute or two. Maybe it comes from a longer story that you tell later, but you want it to look like from the opening scene of a movie about your life. So right away you're in the theater and you're up a scene that everybody could say, "Oh yeah, what happens now?"
Right. That makes so much sense, because again, I think when someone's vulnerable and not necessarily, I guess, emotional, you know, they're crying, "I had a horrible growing up." That's kind of scary for people, right? But I mean, when you're just sort of sharing was, I think so many of us feel, you know, like we can identify with someone who has had any kind of whatever it may be.
Anything.
Yeah.
They're all having some aspect of the same problem of being human in this world.
Something that we all, you know, and most of us are, you know, self-conscious, or most of us want to be loved. Most of us want to feel, you know, nourished in our lives, whatever. So I think those subjects we can all relate to when we're opening up a speech and talking to someone. So, something I noticed that I love about you in your presentation is your body language. I study body language with, you know, but I love the way that you express yourself. And the way that your hands move, it's not overdoing it. It's not too, because some people are, it's almost like, whoa, I've seen people speak and they're like,
Funny you bring that up, because I have not the slightest attention to what I'm doing. I know in places they teach you how to make gestures like this. Upon the stage. It's got natural. It's got to be natural. And you don't know what it is until you do it.
Right. Well, exactly. It's the mind-body connection, and we're trying to express our ideas and open-ended. You know, that's welcoming is, and all of your body movements are very open and, you know, welcoming. So that's, you know, that's lovely.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I wanted to mention that this work even works on Zoom.
Yes, it does. Yes.
Since the COVID, and I found a way to do it on Zoom that almost replicates what it is live.
Yes.
The good thing about Zoom is that people from Poland and world and all over the country that I can't do in an in-person circle. So that's the best way. If anybody's interested in getting a taste of the work, coming to a Zoom circle, 1 hour,
I love
give
that.
You a real head start.
Yes. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Here is the book, folks, if you want to get more into learning about this. Lee Glickstein, founder of Speaking School International. He's an authority on leadership presence and magnetism in public speaking. He's done so much work and trained over 1,000 speaking circles, facilitators, led groups in 8 countries, 6 languages. And this is a book for really helping you be seen now, inspiring insights into being a fearless speaker. You can also see his other 2 books as well. Be Heard Now, 2 versions of really psychologically. This is great to help you sort of come out of all your fears and learn how to be a better speaker or a person in general, just meeting people, whether it's in a workplace, whether it's in a convention that you have to speak at, whether it's in a social situation where you get to meet new people and you're a little afraid of how you're going to come off, right? So we did the mirror exercise, which was great. Can we go through some other steps? Because I know I had some people reaching out to me on straighttalkdoc@gmail.com saying, hey, can you have Mr. Glickstein talk about other ways, quick and dirty, that we can learn how to be a little more comfortable in public speaking situations or group situations? So we just did the mirror. This is, get the book, okay, folks? But I've got it live right now, so let's talk about some of those things.
Yeah, well, for one thing, the main mistake people make in speaking is the applause ends and they start talking. I mean, that little thing. Oh, thank you for, or they tell a joke, anything. It doesn't matter how they start. What's happening after the applause stops and they speak right away? No space? That is where you need to look around. Take 2 or 3 breaths. Now, the fear is some people are going to say, what, cat got your tongue? Or the fear is that people are going to get uncomfortable. And the truth is a few people might get uncomfortable.
Right.
Because you're not talking.
That's right.
But so more people get more uncomfortable when you just start speaking and you don't even notice us, you know.
Right.
But taking that full and starting to see your people, and I don't mean looking and smiling. And you smile. No, it's almost more like honoring your audience.
Yes.
Honoring your audience.
Right.
And if you can do that for 15 seconds, although I like 30 seconds, but even just 10.
Yes.
One full breath. It will make a difference. It'll move you on that road. But notice how few speakers, even professional speakers, do that. And when you start to notice that, you start to notice that you're missing it.
Right? It's almost like they want to jump in right away. They want to jump in right away.
Yeah.
You know, let's just get going because I'm a little nervous and I'm just going to give. Yeah.
Right. And that's more nervous.
Well,
jump right in. So there's.
All right. No, it's about, and you talked a lot about, inviting, connection, inviting, letting others know that you're safe and it's comfortable, and I listening presence. And you also spoke about the blind woman. So there is a thing, and I love to talk about this, about energy. We can see folks, but then we can not see people and feel their energy. So is that a large part of your teaching and elements of communication?
Well, one way I could put it is the soul of the room.
Ah.
It's a group. It's the soul of the group.
Ah.
There is an energy that often doesn't come together because the speaker is not facilitating the belonging.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah, it's about the feel, and I can't, is it a physical feel? Is it a mental feel? It's a being held feel.
Yes. Yes.
That's what you are responsible for facilitating from the moment you stand. Actually, yeah, from the moment you get up.
Yes.
What are you doing to make them feel connected to their being?
Right.
And it becomes second nature. It's not a bunch of tricks and techniques.
Right.
I don't teach tricks, techniques, and tips, tricks, and techniques.
Right.
Like when I say take that full breath, somebody say, well, that's a good technique. No, that's the rule of relationships.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. No, it's perfect. And you've coined the phrase relational presence in,
yes,
you know, all of your teaching of speaking circles international. How can we bring relational presence into sort of our everyday lives with
yeah,
folks?
Yeah, but it's interesting that I've done weekend workshops, and at the end, so it's a weekend workshop, and they go home Saturday night and come back Sunday. And I've had people come back Sunday, and I remember a man saying, I looked at my teenage daughter.
Oh, that's scary.
A whole different way last night.
Right?
When she started speaking, I really, and I didn't make a show. He said, I didn't say, I've done this workshop and I'm doing it.
Yeah.
He said, I just was more neutral and accepting and stayed there with her. And it made all the difference. And particularly, like I mentioned, the mother who through speaking circles realized that she wasn't giving her eyes to the person. That when her daughter was acting out in some way.
Sure.
She wasn't really
Right.
I mean, the daughter's too young to know what she's,
sure,
what she's doing. But to give her those eyes of, I'm here with you, without knowing what's going on. So, yeah, we bring it into everyday life. We bring it into work. We have people people in business who bring it into how they do business.
Yes.
Not just speaking to groups,
right,
in business, but how they are with clients, how they,
yes,
listen.
Yes.
How they listen to their customers.
Exactly. In all aspects of our lives. And sometimes, just little side note, sometimes I ask moms who I talk to who have little kids, you know, they can be such a brat, they tell me. Their child can be, and I say, why do you think they're doing this? They want your attention. They want you to stop what you're doing, scoot down to their level, sit on the floor, whatever that is.
But I don't have time for that. I've got to earn money to get food for them.
Right. That's right. I've got mouths to be. Well, you have 5 minutes to sit down, look in their eyes, hold them, say, what can I do for you, honey? What do you need? You know, or what would you like to play? Or so. That's
another thing people can do to bring this home from right now, from right,
yep,
here.
Is, yep,
there are people who do little speaking circles around the table before.
Yes.
So people, let's say a family of four or five gets together for dinner, and before the food is served, 1 minute each.
Right.
Everybody to be with you for that minute, just to check in.
Right.
And little kids, at first, they'll act out. They'll run around the room. So let them do it. Be with them.
Beautiful.
And if people who do this day after day, it becomes a family ritual.
It does. It really, that's beautiful. That's so true. Mm-hmm. Lee Glickstein, you are great. We're going to have to wrap things up pretty soon because it's about that time for the news coming up. But I really want to encourage folks to pick up your book, Be Seen Now. Wonderful about public speaking. Also, psychologically speaking, it's great with your personal relationships, feeling, you know, just more confident within yourself. It's a wonderful read, and thank you so much for it. What is the best way people can find out more about you and get your books if they want?
I love to get emails. Lee@speakingcircles.com. I love to communicate by email, and I love to do a 15-minute no fee conversation to give you a taste of it on Zoom.
Yes.
So I'd love to hear from you if this made any difference in your life. Thank you.
Oh,
and thank you, Dr. Michelle.
Oh, you're terrific. What a great guest. Of course, you've done this for many years. So, but it's just, you know, you've made me, and I'm sure a lot of my viewers and listeners who are hearing your voice, so comfortable and relaxed. And, you know, your teachings are great. So thank you for what you do for everyone out there. Aw, Lee Glickstein, founder of Speaking Circles International. Check it out. He's an authority on leadership presence and magnetism in public speaking. Thank you for being with me today. Have a good one. All right, everybody. Thanks for being here on the couch with me. Great speaker. Be seen now if you want more information. Always take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. Thanks for joining me.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.